us! We lived together 4.5 years, you animal! You idiot!
I have to find some way to save myself!
Who are these men? I never understood it. Now I know.
What?
It's me.
It is?
Get out of my room. I'm the man with the knives.
You are?
If I could get up now, I'd kill you. I would. Go away. Go away or I'll scream.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
It is you.
Please don't scream.
Go.
I recognize you now.
Please.
Oh, wait. I... Oh.
He covers his mouth with his hand, gags, and removes his hand, red with blood.
I'm bleeding.
Mr. Wise!
Appearing dressed in Antarctic explorer's apparel.
Right here!
I want to go away. I can't see him anymore.
Where?
Anywhere far away.
Absolutamente.
Harper and Mr. Lies vanish. Joe looks up, sees that she's gone.
When I open my eyes, you'll be gone!
Lewis leaves.
Harper? Oh, it worked. Harper! I hurt all over. I wish I was dead!
Scene 10. The same day. Sunset. In front of Hannah's house in Salt Lake City. Hannah and Sister Ella Chapter, a real estate saleswoman and Hannah Pitt's closest friend, although Hannah is never friendly, and Ella is severely intimidated by her.
Look at that view! A view of heaven, like the living city of heaven, isn't it? It just barely glimmers in the sun.
Glimmers!
Even the stone and brick, it just glimmers and glitters like heaven in the sunshine. Such a nice view you get. Perched up on a canyon rim. Some kind of beautiful place.
It's just Salt Lake. And you're selling the house for me, not to me.
I'd like to work up an enthusiasm for my properties.
Just get me a good price.
Well, the market's off.
At least 50.
40'd be more like it.
50!
Wish you'd wait a bit.
Well, I can't.
Wish you would. You're about the only friend I got.
Well, no.
You know why I decided to like you? I decided to like you because you're the only unfriendly Mormon I ever met.
Your wig is crooked.
Fix it.
Hannah straightens Ella's wig.
New York City. All they got there is tiny rooms. I always thought people ought to stay put. That's why I got my license to sell real estate. It's a way of saying, have a house, stay put. It's a way of saying, traveling's no good. Plus, I needed the cash.
She takes out a pack of cigarettes from her purse, lights one, offers the pack to Hannah.
Not out here. Anyone could come by. There's been days I've stood at this ledge and the thought about stepping over. It's a hard place, Salt Lake. Baked dry. Abundant energy. Not much intelligence. That's a combination that can wear a body out. No harm? Looking someplace else? I don't need much room. My sister-in-law, Libby, thinks there is radon gas in the basement.
Is there gas?
Of course not. Libby's a fool.
Because I'd have to include that in the description.
There's no gas, Ella. Give a puff.
Hannah takes a furtive drag of Ella's cigarette. Then she hands the cigarette back to Ella.
Put it away now.
Ella carefully knocks the ash off the cigarette, extinguishes it, and returns it to the pack. Desolate, she looks at Hannah.
So I guess it's goodbye.
You'll be all right, Ella. I wasn't ever much of a friend.
I'll say something, but don't laugh, okay? This is the home of saints. the godliest place on earth, they say, and I think they're right. Does that mean there's no evil here? No. Evil's everywhere. Sin's everywhere. But this is the spring of sweet water in the desert. The desert flower. Every step a believer takes away from here is a step fraught with peril. I fear for you, Hannah Pitt, because you are my friend. Stay put. This is the right home of saints.
Latter-day saints.
Only kind left.
But still, late in the day, for saints on everyone, that's all. That's all. $50,000 for the house, Sister Alla Chapter. Don't undersell. It's an impressive view.
Act 3. Not yet conscious, forward dawning. December 1985. Scene 1. Late night, several days after the end of Act 2, Pryor's bedroom, completely dark. Pryor is in bed, having a nightmare. He wakes up, sits up in bed, and switches on a lamp. He looks at his clock. Seated by the table near the bed is a man, fierce and gloomy, dressed in the clothing of a 13th century British farmer squire, carrying a scythe. Pryor is terrified.
Who are you?
My name is Pryor Walter.
My name is Pryor Walter.
I know that.
Explain!
You're alive, I'm not. We have the same name. What do you want me to explain?
A ghost.
An ancestor.
Not the Pryor Walter, the Bayeux Tapestry Pryor Walter.
His great-great-grandson. The fifth of the name.
I'm the 34th, I think.
Actually, the 32nd.
Not according to Mother.
She's including the two bastards, then. I say leave them out. I say no room for bastards. The little things you swallow.
The ghost snatches up a plastic pill bottle from Pryor's nightstand.
Pills.
Pills. For the pestilence.
Pestilence? You two what?
The pestilence in my time was much worse than now. Old villages of empty houses. You could look outdoors and see death walking in the morning. Dew dampening the ragged hem of his black robe, plain as I see you now.
You died of the plague.
A spotty monster. Like you. Alone.
I'm not alone.
You have no wife, nor children.
I'm gay.
So? Be gay. Dancing you're all together for all I care. What's that to do with not having children?
Gay, homosexual, not Bonnie, blithe, never mind.
I had 12 when I died.
A second ghost appears. This one dressed in the clothing of an elegant 17th century Londoner.
And I was 3 years younger than him.
Oh, God, another one!
Pryor Walter. Prior to you, by some 17 others.
He's gotten the bastards.
Are we having a convention?
We've been sent to declare her fabulous incipients. They love a well-paved entrance. With lots of heralds and all.
The messenger come. Prepare the way. The infinite descent. A breath in air.
They chose us, I suspect, because of the mortal affinities. In a family as long descended as the Walters, there are bound to be a few carried off by plague.
The spotty monster.
Black Jack came from a water pump, half the city of London. Can you imagine? His came from fleas. Fleas. Yours, I understand, is the lamentable consequence of venery.
Fleas on rats, but who knew that?
Am I going to die?
Shh! We aren't allowed to discuss.
When you do, you don't get ancestors to help you through it. You may be surrounded by children, but you die alone.
I'm afraid.
You should be. The path's rocky, dark, and steep.
Don't alarm him. There's good news before there's bad. We too come to strew rose petal and palm leaf before the triumphal procession. Prophet, seer, revelator. It's a great honor for the family.
He hasn't got a family.
I meant for the Walters. Ah, for the family in the larger sense.
All I want is a room somewhere far away from the cold night air.
Come, come. This is no brain fever.
Adonai, Adonai,
even now, from the mirror-bright halls of heaven, across the cold and lifeless infinity of space, the messenger comes, trailing orbs of light. Fabulous, incipient, O prophet to you. Prepare, prepare, the infinite descent, a breath, a feather, glory to...
They vanish. Scene 2. The next day. Split scene. Pryor in an exam room in an outpatient clinic at the hospital. He's seated on a stool hooked up to a pentamidine IV drip. Lewis and Belize facing one another at a table in a coffee shop. Lewis, responding to something Belize has said, is pursuing an idea, as he always does, by thinking aloud.
Why has democracy succeeded in America? Of course, by succeeded, I mean comparatively, not literally, not in the present, but what makes for the prospect of some sort of radical democracy spreading outwards and growing up? Why does the power that was once so carefully preserved at the top of the pyramid by the original framers of the Constitution seem drawn inexorably downward and outward in spite of the best efforts of the right to stop this? I mean, it's the really hard thing about being left in this country. The American left can't help but trip over these petrified little fetishes. You know, freedom, that's the worst. You know, you could... Gene Kirkpatrick, for God's sakes, will go on and on about freedom. But so what does that mean? The word freedom, when she talks about it. Or human rights? You got Bush talking about human rights. So what are these people talking about? They might as well be talking about the mating habits of Venusians. These people don't begin to know what ontologically freedom is or human rights. Like, they see the bourgeois, property-based rights of man type rights, but that's not enfranchisement. It's not democracy. It's not what's implicit or what's potential within the idea. It's not the idea with blood in it. That's just liberalism. I think it's the worst kind of liberalism, really. Bourgeois tolerance. And what I think is that what AIDS shows us is the limits of tolerance, that it's not enough to be tolerated, because when the shit hits the fan, you find out how much tolerance is worth nothing. And underneath all the tolerance is intense, passionate hatred.
Uh-huh.
But you don't think that's true?
Uh-huh, it is.
The power is the object, not being tolerated. Fuck assimilation. No, but, I mean, in spite of all this, the thing about America, I think, is that ultimately we are different from every other nation on Earth in that with people here of every race, we can't. Ultimately, what defines us isn't race, but politics. It's not like any European country where there's an insurmountable fact of a kind of racial or ethnic monopoly or monolith. You know, like all Dutchmen, I mean Dutch people are... Well, Dutch, you know, and the Jews of Europe were never Europeans. They were just a small problem facing the monolith. But here, there are so many small problems that it's really just a collection of small problems. The monolith is missing. Oh, I mean, it's course, I suppose, there is the monolith of white America. White, straight, male America.
Which is not unimpressive, even among monoliths.
When the race thing gets taken care of, I don't mean to minimalize how major it is. I mean, I know it is. This is a really, really incredibly racist country, but it's like, you know, the British, you know, I mean, all these blue-eyed pink people, and it's just weird, you know? I mean, I'm not all that Jewish-looking, or... So, I don't know, maybe I am, but, you know, in New York, everyone is. Not everyone, but so many are. But in England, in London, I walk into bars and I feel like Sid the Yid. You know what I mean? Like Woody Allen in Annie Hall with the payas and the gabardine coat. I mean, like, never, never anywhere so much. I mean, not actively despised. It's not like there are Germans, you know, who I think are still terribly anti-Semitic and racist too. I mean, black racist. You know, they pretend otherwise, but just anyway, in England, there's just so. And at one point, I met this black gay guy from Jamaica who talked with a lilt, but he said his family had been living in England since before the Civil War. And, yeah, the American one. And how the English never let him forget for a minute that he wasn't blue-eyed and pink. And I said, yeah, me too. I said, these people are anti-Semites. And he said, yeah, but the British Jews have got the clothing business all sewed up and that blacks there can't get a foothold. And it was an incredibly awkward moment of just... I mean, here we were in this bar. It was gay, but it was a pub, you know, like, you know, with the beams and the plaster and those horrible little, like, 2-day-old fish and egg sandwiches. It was just so British. It was so old. And I felt, well, there's no way out of this because both of us are right now too much immersed in this history. Hope is dissolved in the sheer age of this place where race is what counts and there's no real hope of change. It's the racial destiny of the Brits that matters to them, not their political destiny. Whereas in America...
Here in America, race doesn't count.
No, that's not what I'm... You can't be hearing that.
I'm hearing a lot of different things.
Yes, but ultimately, race here is a political question, right? I mean, racists just try to use race here as a tool in a political struggle. That it's not really about race. I mean, the spiritualists try to use that stuff. Are you enlightened? Are you centered? You know, channeled? Whatever this reaching out for a spiritual past in a country where no indigenous spirits exist, only the Indians, the Native American spirits, and we killed them off. So now there are no gods here. There are no ghosts and spirits in America. There are no angels in America. There's no spiritual past. There's no racial past. There is only the political and the decoys and the ploys to maneuver around the inescapable battle of politics, the shifting downward and outwards of political power to the people. That's
power to the people. Amen. Oh my goodness. Will you look at the time? I got it.
You think this is what, like racist or naive or something?
Well, it's certainly something. Look, I just remembered I have an appointment, so
what?
I'm gonna get on with it.
I mean, I really don't want to, like, speak from some position of privilege. And
I'm sitting here thinking eventually he's got to run out of steam. So I'll let you rattle on and on, saying maybe about 7 or 8 things I find really offensive.
What?
But I know you, Lewis. And I know the guilt fueling this peculiar tirade is obviously already swollen bigger than your hemorrhoids.
I don't have hemorrhoids.
I hear different. May I finish?
Yes, but I don't have hemorrhoids.
So finally, when I do get a word in,
Pryor
you promise, Louis, Pryor is not a subject.
You brought him up.
I brought up hemorrhoids.
So it's indirect passive-aggressive.
Unlike, I suppose, bang me over the head with your theory that America doesn't have a race problem.
Oh, well, be fair. I never said that.
Not exactly, but...
But
it was close enough. Because if it had been that blunt, I'd have just walked
you
out.
You deliberately misinterpreted.
Stop interrupting. I haven't been able to...
Just let me...
No! What? Talk? You've been running your mouth non-stop since I got here. Yada yada, blah blah blah. Up the hill, down the hill, playing with your monolith.
And you girlfriend could have joined in at any
awesome
time.
Spectacle. But I got better things to do with my time than sit here listening to this racist bullshit just because I feel sorry for your ass.
I am not
a racist.
Oh, come on. Okay, so maybe I am a racist.
Oh, I really hate that. It's no fun picking on you, Louis. You're so guilty. It's like throwing darts into a glob of jello. There's no satisfying hits, just quivering. The darts just blop in and vanish.
I just think that when you are discussing lines of oppression, it gets very complicated.
Oh, and is that a fact? You know, we black drag queens have a rather intimate knowledge of the complexity of the lines of...
Ex-black drag queen.
Actually, XX.
You're doing drag again?
I don't... Maybe. I don't have to tell you. Maybe.
Well, I think it's sexist.
I didn't ask you.
Well, it is. The gay community, I think, has to adopt the same attitude towards drag as black women have to take towards black women blues singers.
Oh my, we are walking dangerous tonight.
Well, it's all internalized oppression, right? I mean, the masochism, the stereotypes...
Louis, are you deliberately trying to make me hate you?
No,
I mean... Are you deliberately transforming yourself into an arrogant, sexual, political, Stalinist, / racist flag-waving thug for my benefit?
You know what I think?
What?
You hate me because I'm a Jew.
I'm leaving.
It's true.
You have no basis except to... Ugh. Louis. It's good to know you haven't changed. You were still an honorary citizen of the Twilight Zone. And after... Your pale, pale white polemics on behalf of racial insensitivity. You have a flaming fuck of a lot of nerve calling me an anti-Semite. Now really, gotta go.
You called me Lou the Jew.
That was a joke.
But I didn't think it was funny. It was hostile.
It was 3 years ago.
So?
You just called yourself Sid the Yid.
But that's not the same thing.
Oh, Sid the Yid is different from Lou the Jew.
Yes.
Well, someday you'll have to explain that to me, but right now... You hate me because you hate black people.
But I do not. But I do think that most black people are anti-Semitic.
Most black people. That's racist, Louis. And I think that most Jews...
Louis Farrakhan.
Ed Koch.
Jesse Jackson.
Jackson? Oh, really, Louis? This
what,
is too...
Hymetown?
Louis, you voted for Jesse Jackson. You sent checks to the Rainbow Coalition.
I'm ambivalent. The checks bounced.
All your checks bounced, Louis. You're ambivalent about everything.
What's that supposed to mean?
You may be dumber than shit, but I refuse to believe you can't figure it out. Try.
I was never ambivalent about Pryor. I love him. I do. I really do.
Nobody said different.
Love and ambivalence are... No, real love isn't ambivalent.
Real love isn't ambivalent. I swear that's a line from my favorite best-selling paperback novel. In love with the night mysterious, except I don't think you ever read it.
I never read it, no.
You ought to. Instead of spending the rest of your life trying to get through democracy in America. It's about this white woman whose daddy owns a plantation in the Deep South in the years before the Civil War. The American one. And her name is Margaret. And she's in love with her daddy's number one slave. And his name is Thaddeus. And she's married. But her white slave owner husband has AIDS. antebellum, and sufficiently developed sex organs. And there's a lot of hot stuff going down when Margaret and Thaddeus can catch a spare Torrid 10 under the cotton-picking moon. And then, of course, the Yankees come, and they set the slaves free, and the slaves string up old daddy, and so on. Historical fiction. Somewhere in there, I recall, Margaret and Thaddeus find the time to discuss the nature of love. Her face is reflecting the flames of the burning plantation. You know, the way white people do. And his black face is dark in the night. She says to him, Thaddeus, real love isn't ever ambivalent.
In the outpatient clinic, Emily enters wearing latex gloves. She turns off Pryor's IV drip.
Thaddeus looks at her. He's contemplating her thesis. And he isn't sure he agrees.
Emily removes the drip needle from Pryor's arm and bandages the puncture wound.
Treatment number 4.
Pharmaceutical miracle. Lazarus breathes again.
Is he... How bad is he?
You want the laundry list?
Shirt off. Let's check the...
Pryor takes off his shirt. Emily examines his lesions.
There's the weight problem and the shit problem and the morale problem.
Only 6? That's good. Pants.
Pryor removes his pants and underwear. He's naked. She examines his crotch. Then he turns around and she examines his butt, looking for new lesions.
And... he thinks he's going crazy.
Pryor puts his underwear back on.
Looking good. What else?
Ankles sore and swollen, but the legs better. The nausea's mostly gone with the little orange pills. BM's pure liquid, but not bloody anymore, for now. My eye doctor says everything's okay, for now. My dentist says yuck when he sees my fuzzy tongue, and now he wears little condoms on his thumb and forefinger and a mask. So what? My dermatologist is in Hawaii, and my mother... Well, leave my mother out of it, which is usually where my mother is, out of it. my glands are like walnuts. My weight's holding steady for week 2, and a friend died 2 days ago of bird tuberculosis. Bird tuberculosis. Well, that scared me. And I didn't go to the funeral today because... he was an Irish Catholic, and it was probably open casket, and I was afraid of something, you know. The bird TB, or seeing him, or so. So, I guess I'm doing okay. Except for, of course, I'm going nuts.
We ran the toxoplasmosis series. There's no indication.
No, I know, but I feel like something terrifying is on its way, you know, like a missile from outer space, and it's plummeting down towards the Earth, and I'm ground zero. And look, I am generally known where I am known as one cool, collected queen, and I am ruffled.
There's really nothing to worry about. I think that Shochem Bachomim, Hamse Manucho Nochono Alcanthe Haschino.
What?
Everything's fine. Bima alos kadoshum. Utochorum kezohar horokium maskerim.
Oh, I don't understand.
Es nishmas, Pryor. Shachalom loolamo. Ba avorjanod vusadokabaad has koras nishmas.
Why are you doing that? Stop it! Stop it!
Stop what?
You were just. Weren't you just speaking in Hebrew or something?
Hebrew? I'm basically Italian-American. No, I did not speak in Hebrew.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Please. I really think that I'm...
Look, I'm sorry. I have a waiting room full of... Look, I think you're one of the lucky ones. You'll live for years, probably. You're pretty healthy for someone with no immune system. Are you seeing someone? Loneliness is a danger. A therapist.
No, I don't need to see anyone.
Well, think about it. You aren't going crazy. You're just under a lot of stress. It's no wonder.
Suddenly, there is an astonishing blaze of light, and a great book with steel pages mounted atop a molten red pillar bursts through the floor. In rapid succession, the book flies open. Instantly, a large aleph inscribed on the right-hand page glows red and bursts into flames, whereupon the book immediately slams shut, and with the molten red pillar, it disappears in an eye blink under the floor. As the lights restore to reveal the floor perfectly unmarred, not a trace of its having been torn asunder. Emily, making notes in Pryor's file, has noticed none of this. Pryor is agog.
I can't. Oh God. Hebrew.
Pryor is paralyzed with fear. Then, partly undressed, he flees.
Help me.
I beg your pardon?
You're a nurse. Give me something. I don't know what to do anymore. Last week at work, I screwed up the Xerox machine, and permanently. And so I tripped up on the subway steps, and my glasses broke, and I cut my forehead here. See? And now I can't see much, and my forehead is like... It's like the mark of Cain. And it's stupid, right? But it won't heal. And every morning I see it and I think that mark of Cain, biblical things, people who in betraying what they love, betray what's truest in themselves. That I feel nothing but cold for myself, just cold. And every night, I miss him. I miss him. I miss him so much. But, you know, and the sores, you know, and the smell, and where I thought it was going. I could be sick too. Maybe I'm sick too. I don't know. Please, tell him I love him. Can you do that?
I thought about it for a very long time. And I still don't understand what love is. Justice is simple. Democracy is simple. Those things are unambivalent. But love is very hard. And it goes bad for you if you violate the hard law of love.
I'm dying.
He's dying. You just wish you were. Oh, cheer up, Lewis. Look at that heavy sky out there.
Purple.
Purple? Boy, what kind of homosexual are you anyway? That's not purple, Mary. That color up there is mauve. All day today, it's felt like Thanksgiving. Soon this ruination will be blanketed white. You can smell it. Can you smell it?
Smell what?
Softness, compliance, forgiveness. Grace.
No.
I can't help you learn that. I can't help you, Lewis. You're not my business.
Lewis puts his head in his hands, inadvertently touching his cut forehead.
Ow! Fuck! Wait, what? Smell what? Snow.
Hello.
Scene 3. Harper in a very white, cold place with a brilliant blue sky above, a delicate snowfall. She is dressed in a beautiful snowsuit, the sound of the sea faint.
Snow! Ice! Mountains of ice! Where am I? I feel better. I do. I feel better. There are ice crystals in my lungs, wonderful and sharp. And the snow smells like cold, crushed peaches. And there's something, some current of blood in the wind. How strange. It has that iron taste.
Mr. Lies appears, also in splendid snow gear. His is emblazoned on the back with the IOTA logo.
Ozone!
Ozone? Wow! Where am I?
The Kingdom of Ice, the bottommost part of the world.
Antarctica. This is Antarctica.
Cold shelter for the shattered. No sorrow here. Tears free.
Antarctica! Antarctica! Oh, boy, look at this! Wow. I must have really snapped the tether, huh?
Apparently.
Oh, that's great. I want to stay here forever. Set up camp. Build things. Build a city. An enormous city made up of frontier forts. Dark wood and green roofs and high gates made of pointed logs and bonfires burning on every street corner. I should build by a river. Where are the forests?
No timber here. Too cold. Ice. No trees.
Oh, details. I'm sick of details. I'll plant them and grow them. I'll live off caribou fat. I'll melt it over the bonfires and drink it from long, curved goat horn cups. It'll be great. I want to make a new world here so that I never have to go home again.
As long as it lasts. Ice has a way of melting.
No, forever. I can have anything I want here. Maybe even companionship. Someone who has desire for me. You, maybe.
It is against the bylaws of the International Order of Travel Agents to get involved with clients. Rules are rules. Anyway, I'm not the one you really want.
There isn't anyone. Oh, maybe an Eskimo who could ice fish for food and help me build a nest for when the baby comes.
There are no Eskimo in Antarctica, and you are not really pregnant. You made that up.
Well, all of this is made up. So if the snow feels cold, I'm pregnant. Right? Here, I can be pregnant, and I can have any kind of baby I want.
This is a retreat, a vacuum. Its virtue is that it lacks everything. Deep freeze for the feelings. You can be numb and safe here. That's what you came for. Respect the delicate ecology of your delusions.
You mean like no Eskimo in Antarctica?
Correcto! Ice and snow, no Eskimo. Even hallucinations have laws.
Well, then who's that?
The Eskimo appears.
An Eskimo.
An Antarctic Eskimo. A fisher of the polar deep.
There is something wrong with his picture.
The Eskimo beckons.
Ah, I'm going to like this place. It's my own National Geographic special. Oh, I think I felt her kicking. Maybe I'll give birth to a baby covered in thick white fur. That way she won't be cold. My breasts will be full of hot cocoa so she doesn't get chilly. And if it gets really cold, she'll have a pouch that I can crawl into. Like a marsupial. We'll mend together. That's what we'll do. We'll mend.
Scene 4. Same day as Scene 2. Snowfall. An abandoned lot in the South Bronx. Trash around. A homeless woman is standing near an oil drum in which a fire is burning. She's sipping soup from a cloudy plastic container. Hannah enters, frightened, angry, and cold, dragging two heavy suitcases.
Excuse me. I said, excuse me? Can you tell me where I am? Is this Brooklyn? Do you know a Pineapple Street? Is there some sort of bus or train or...
The homeless woman looks at Hannah but doesn't respond.
I'm lost. I just arrived from Salt Lake City. Utah.
The homeless woman sips some soup.
I took the bus that I was told to take, and I got off. Well, it was the very last stop, so I had to get off, and I asked the driver, was this Brooklyn? And he nodded yes. But he was from one of those foreign countries where they think it's good manners to nod at everything, even if you have no idea what it is you're nodding at. And in truth, I think he spoke no English at all, which I think would make him ineligible for employment on public transportation, the public being English-speaking. Mostly. Do you speak English?
The homeless woman nods.
I was supposed to be met at the airport by my son. He didn't show. And I don't wait more than 3¾ hours for anyone. Well, I should have been patient, I guess. Is this...
Bronx.
Is that the Bronx? Well, how in the name of heaven did I get to the Bronx when the bus driver said...
The homeless woman turns to the empty air beside her.
Slurp, slurp, slurp. Will you stop that disgusting slurping, you disgusting slurping feeding animal? Feeding yourself, just feeding yourself. What would it matter to you or anyone if you just stopped feeding and died?
Can you just tell me where
Why was the Kosciuszko Bridge named after a Polak?
I don't know what you're...
That was a joke.
Well, what's the punchline?
I don't know.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Is there anyone else who can...
The homeless woman turns again to the person she's hallucinating.
Stand further off, you fat, loathsome whore! You can't have any more of this soup. Slurp, 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 you animal. And I know you'll just go pee it all away. And where will you do that? Behind what bush? It's fucking cold out here and... Oh, that's right. Because it was supposed to have been a tunnel. That's not very funny. Have you read the prophecies of Nostradamus?
Who?
Some guy I went out with once somewhere. Nostradamus. Prophet. Outcast. Eyes like scary shit.
Shut up! Please. Now, I want you to stop jabbering for a minute and pull your wits together and tell me how to get to Brooklyn. Because you know, and you are going to tell me. Because there is no one else around to tell me. And I am wet and cold and I am very angry. So I'm sorry you're psychotic, but just make the effort. Take a deep breath. Do it.
Hannah and the homeless woman breathe together.
That's good. Now exhale. Good. Now, how do I get to Brooklyn?
Don't know. Never been. Sorry. Want some soup?
Manhattan? Maybe you know... Nah. I don't suppose you know the location of the Mormon Visitor's Center.
65th and Broadway.
How do you...
Go there all the time. Free movies. Boring, but you can stay all day.
Wow. So, how do we...
Take the D train. Next block, make a right.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. In the new century, I think we will all be insane.
Scene 5. Same day. Joe and Roy in the living room of Roy's brownstone. Joe has just come in and is still in his coat. Roy wears an elegant bathrobe.
I can't. The answer's no. I'm sorry.
Oh. Well. Apologies. I can't see that there's anyone asking for apologies.
I'm sorry, Roy.
Oh, well, apologies.
My wife's missing, Roy. My mother's come from Salt Lake to help look, I guess. I'm supposed to be at the airport now, picking her up, but I just spent 2 days in the hospital, Roy, with a bleeding ulcer. I was spitting up blood.
Blood, huh? Look, I'm very busy here.
And... it's just a job.
A job? A job? Washington. Dumb. Utah. Mormon hick shit.
Roy!
Washington! When Washington called me, I was younger than you. You think I said, oh, fuck no, I can't go. I got 2 fingers up my asshole and a little moral nosebleed to boot. When Washington calls you, my pretty young punk friend, you go, or you can go fuck yourself sideways, 'cause the train has pulled out of the station, and you are out. Nowhere. Out in the cold. Fuck you, Mary Jane. Get out of here.
Just let me...
explain ephemera. You broke my heart. Explain that. Explain that!
I love you, Roy. There's so much that I want to be what you see in me. I want to be a participant in the world, in your world, Roy. I want to be capable of that. I've tried. Really, I have, but I can't do this. Not because I don't believe in you, but because I believe in you so much, in what you stand for at heart, the order, the decency. I would give anything to protect you, but there are laws I can't break. It's too ingrained. It's not me. There's enough damage I've already done. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm dead.
You're not dead, boy. You're a sissy. You love me. That's moving. I'm moved. It's nice to be loved. I warned you about her, didn't I, Joe? But you don't listen to me. Why? Because you say Roy is smart and Roy's a friend, but Roy, well, he isn't nice. And you want to be nice, right? A nice, nice man. You know what my greatest accomplishment was, Joe, in my life? What I am able to look back on and be proudest of? And I have helped make presidents and unmake them. And mayors and more goddamn judges than anyone in New York City ever. And several million dollars tax-free. And what do you think means the most to me? You ever hear of Ethel Rosenberg? Huh, Joe? Huh?
Well, yeah, I guess I... yes.
Yes, yes, you have heard of Ethel Rosenberg. Yes, maybe you even read about her in the history books. If it wasn't for me, Joe, Ethel Rosenberg would be alive today, writing some personal advice column for Ms. Magazine. She isn't. Because during the trial, Joe, I was on the phone every day talking with the judge.
Roy?
Every day, doing what I do best. Talking on the telephone, making sure that timid Yid Nebish on the bench did his duty to America, to history. That sweet, unprepossessing woman, 2 kids, boo-hoo-hoo, reminded us all of our little Jewish mamas. She came this close to getting life. I pleaded till I wept to put her in the chair, me. I did that. I would have fucking pulled the switch if they'd have let me. Why? Because I fucking hate traitors. Because I fucking hate communists. Was it legal? Fuck legal. Am I a nice man? Fuck nice. They say terrible things about me in the nation. Fuck the nation. You want to be nice? No, you want to be effective. Make the law or subject to it. Choose. Your wife chose. A week from today, she'll be back. She knows how to get what she wants.
Maybe I ought to send her to Washington.
I don't believe you.
Gospel.
You can't possibly mean what you're saying. Roy, you were the assistant United States attorney in the Rosenberg case. Ex parte communication with the judge during the trial would be censurable at least, probably conspiracy, and in a case that results in execution, it's...
What, murder?
You're not well, is all.
What do you mean, not well? Who's not well?
You said...
No, I didn't. I said what?
Roy, you have cancer.
No, I don't.
You told me you were dying.
What the fuck are you talking about, Joe? I never said that. I'm in perfect health. There's not a goddamn thing wrong with me. Shake.
Joe hesitates. He holds out his hand to Roy. Roy pulls Joe into a close, strong clench.
It's okay that you hurt me, because I love you, baby Joe. That's why I'm so rough on you.
Roy releases Joe. Joe backs away a step or two.
Prodigal son! The world will wipe its dirty hands all over you.
It already has, Roy.
Now go.
Roy shoves Joe hard. Joe turns to leave. Roy stops him, turns him around. He smooths the lapels on Joe's coat, tenderly.
I'll always be here, waiting for you.
Then with sudden violence, Roy grabs Joe's lapels and pulls him close, shaking him violently.
What did you want from me? What was all this? What do you want? Treacherous, ungrateful little... Ah!
Joe grabs Roy by the front of his robe and propels him across the length of the room, slamming him against the bookcase. Joe holds Roy at arm's length, the other arm ready to hit.
Transgress a little, Joseph. There are so many laws. Find one you can break.
Joe hesitates, then turns and hurries out. Roy doubles over in great pain, which he's been hiding while Joe was in the room, as he sinks to the floor.
Oh, Christ! Ah, Andy! Andy! Ah, get in here! Andy!
The door opens, but it isn't Andy. A small Jewish woman dressed modestly in a 50s hat and coat enters the room. The room darkens.
Who the fuck are you? The new nurse?
The figure in the doorway says nothing. She stares at Roy. Roy forces himself to stand, then he crosses to her. He stares at her closely. Then he crosses back to a chair and sits heavily.
Ah! Fuck! Ethel!
You don't look good, Roy.
Well, Ethel, I don't feel good.
But you lost a lot of weight. That suits you. You were heavy back then. Softig. Mid hips.
I haven't been that heavy since 1960. We were all heavier back then, before the body thing started. Now I look like I'm dying. They stare.
The shit's really hit the fan, huh, Roy? Well, the fun's just started.
What is this, Ethel? Halloween? You're trying to scare me? Well, you're wasting your time. I'm scarier than you any day of the week. So beat it, Ethel. Boo. Better dead than red. Somebody try to shake me up. Ha! Ha! From the throne of God in heaven to the belly of hell, you can all fuck yourselves and then go jump in the lake, because I'm not afraid of you, or death, or hell, or anything.
Be seeing you soon, Roy. Julius sends his regards.
Yeah? Well, send this to Julius!
He flips the bird in her direction, stands and moves toward her, intending to slam the door in her face. Halfway across the room, he collapses, in terrible abdominal pain.
No!
You're a very sick man, Roy.
Oh, God! Andy! Andy!
He doesn't hear you, I guess. We should call the ambulance.
She goes to the phone.
Oh! Buttons! Such things they got now. What do I dial, Roy?
911.
It sings. La, la, la. Yes, you should please send an ambulance to the home of Mr. Roy Cohn, the famous lawyer. Beats me. A pain in his gut. Bad.
No!
A bad pain. What's the address, Roy?
244 East 87th.
244 East 87th Street. No apartment number. He's got the whole building. My name, Ethel Greenglass Rosenberg. Me? No, I'm not related to Mr. Cohn. An old friend. They said a minute.
I have all the time in the world.
You're immortal.
I'm immortal, Ethel.
He wills himself to his feet.
I have forced my way into history. I ain't never gonna die.
History is about to crack wide open. Millennium approaches.
Scene 6. That night, Pryor's bedroom. Pryor 1 watching Pryor in bed, who is staring back at him, even more frightened. Tonight, Pryor 1 is dressed in weird alchemical robes and hat over his historical clothing, and he carries a long palm leaf bundle.
Tonight's the night!
What are you?
Aren't you excited? Tonight she arrives.
Who?
Daughter of Splendor, she of the four lights, from the mirror bright halls of Evan she comes. Lumen, phosphor. Fleur. Candle.
This is madness. This is... I don't want anyone to... I don't know who you're...
Soon enough you'll know. Soon she arrives. Right through the roof. Ha Adam. Ha Gadol. Zazahot Ziphorot. Come, get up out of bed. Give us your hands. Let's...
Garlic! A mirror! Holy water!
He squirts water at Pryor 1 from a small plastic squirt bottle, then drops it and grabs a crucifix.
A crucifix?
If that's holy water in the bottle, you ought to be pissing it about like that. It's not proper
fuck
to...
Fuck off! Get the fuck out of my room! Go!
Oh, for pity's sake, what are you doing to him? He's meant to be jubilating, rejoicing. Get down.
Pryor shakes his head no, recoiling.
Ah, there's a hickory knob, I'll bet.
We all tumesce when they approach. We wax full like moons.
Dance.
Dance?
Stand up, damn it. Give us your hands. Dance.